For the third consecutive year in a row, we've got our good friend Stephanie Link here in town. We're going to start this week by discussing what's transpired so far in 2026 and what might lie ahead. Well, thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
We didn't discuss this, and so maybe not, but we both probably had to worry that we should never meet again after the jinx that was last year. If you recall, the tariffs had been announced literally 5 minutes before we sat down, and all heck was breaking loose at that time, mm-hmm. which made it both the best and worst day to have you in town. So mostly good, of course.
And if you sold on that day, you would have missed 34%.
Pretty brutal panic if you did.
And yeah.
Lots of calls. Remember the next week was spring break. So I was trying to navigate screaming kids and worried clients, which is maybe most days. 26 off to a kind of an exciting start as well. After three big years coming out of the 2022 bear market, where was kind of your general mindset coming into the year? And then I know you kind of summarize maybe the big drivers right now with your TGIF acronym. So kind of walk us through where your mindset's been year to date.
It's been a wild year. Pre-war, we were actually running US economy at 5% growth. Where now, we just got an Atlanta Fed tracker number today, and that number's at 3.7%. Even though we've had a war, we've had all these uncertainties, the TGIFs, it's the tariffs, it's geopolitical issues, it's inflation, it's the Fed. These are things that haven't really gotten decided on. We still have a lot of unknowns, but in the face of that, we have been able to kind of creep a little bit higher. We're up 4% on the year. And if you asked me in January, could we get through Venezuela? Could we get through SCOTUS overturning the tariffs? And we still don't have answers there. Could we get through AI and software getting crushed? And then this war, I would have thought we would be down double digits easily.
Well, and your three Fed cuts may be completely off the table.
That's right. Right? So, I mean,
it's hard to create a bullish narrative out of that fact.
100%. But it speaks to the underlying economy being strong, as I mentioned, led by the consumer. The consumer has jobs. We talk about that all the time. If they have a job, they're going to spend. There's one job for one unemployed person in this country right now. That's pretty okay. It's mm-hmm. not gangbusters, but it's pretty okay. Yeah. And so the consumer is consuming. And then we will talk about themes, but you have to give credit to what's really driving the growth, and that is this whole AI and what I call it the food chain. So it's not just the Mag 7 spending $761 billion on CapEx for AI. It's the food chain. It's, well, if you believe that, they're going to continue to spend, which we got a lot of results this week from some of the Mag 7s, and they are continuing to spend, increasing their spend. If you believe that, you need to build data centers. And we don't have enough data centers. And if you believe that, you need to upgrade the grid because we don't have a grid that can support these data centers and the sheer volume of the data centers. And then, of course, we don't have enough power. So all of those things, all of those industries really get impacted, and they have been helping to grow this economy. And it's been quite powerful, pun intended, but really very something that we haven't seen, this kind of activity, and it's so broad-based.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think we have been able to hang in there. I think why we care, we care because of earnings. If the economy is growing above trend, then earnings can continue to be revised higher. And that's what happened the last 3 years. Earnings were revised higher each year, and they are also getting revised higher even right now.
I believe coming into the year at 14%,
yeah.
and then maybe recently revised to 16%. Mm-hmm. I think I saw that yeah. upward revision.
And so far we're running 25%.
We'll talk credit real quick, and then maybe get into facts, i.e. earnings versus feelings, and how that's, again, mm-hmm. transpired here in the last just few weeks. One of the big scares, there seems to always be something that's being touted as the next, we've been waiting for the next 08, knock on wood, for 18 years now. But Torsten Slok, who I know you chat with just a few days ago, put out a great piece putting this into some context, which was, this private credit direct lending is about 3% of the total debt outstanding. Mm-hmm. We're in 08. Mortgages, households, institutional debt, 60%.
Oh, yeah.
What is your take? Seems to have abated here in the last few weeks, but
yeah.
what was your take on the private credit scares that were dominating the headlines?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was overdone for the most part. There were some bad actors.
Sure.
There was some fraud.
Right.
So you can't like discredit that, but that's not the entire industry,
right,
especially the big private market companies,
right,
you know, the Apollos and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They're very big. They're very diversified. I don't think it's systemic, because to your point of it being a small piece of kind of where people invest in general.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have a lot of different opinions about how much private markets exposure you should have, and within private markets exposure, where should you be? And there's a lot of options out there, and would love to get your thoughts on that too. But I think what we're, so I think it's got overdone, but I do think that you're gonna continue to have redemptions, because I think some people that got into these vehicles didn't understand the lack of liquidity, mm-hmm, and the time that you have to invest in some of these deals, 7 to 10
right,
years. And so you had some people that, you know, didn't know, and they want to take the money out, and you have companies that are capping it out at 5%,
yeah,
and you have some companies that have had redemptions of 14, 15%.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's a disaster. I think it's just going to elongate the unknowns, because you cap it at 5% in terms of the redemptions, and then the rest, you have to wait for the next quarter. And so if you continue to see redemptions, you're gonna still get these headlines. And that's just simply that.
One of the things we've been walking through with clients too is explaining, and again, knock on wood, hasn't happened to us, a private credit fund yet, but the one, gating doesn't mean it's broken, doesn't mean the money's gone,
no,
you know, even when it does happen.
Yeah.
And then a great reminder of, you know, to your point, why you work with players with track records,
yes,
that show prudence and discipline in how they invest. Because to your point, yeah, a lot of money flowed in, a lot of new vehicles were created in the last decade. A lot of players who didn't really know what they were doing had to deploy money, whether it was a good idea or a bad idea, you know, and there are problems there, but, you know, should have argued you shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Right, and I will say that there are some companies, even the big ones, that have exposure to software and
sure,
lending software, and there is really a disconnect happening in software.
Yeah.
I think that there are definitely winners and losers. Mission critical software is not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to displace that, especially
right,
within enterprises. But there are some companies that are going to have to change their business models, instead of on a per seat, getting paid on a per seat basis, more of on a per consumption basis. And I think you're going to see that from a lot of the companies changing their business models. And as you do that, and as they do that, the recurring revenues will probably fall. So
mm-hmm,
there are some companies that worry me for sure, but not all of them.
Right.
Not all of them. And
right,
and again, software exposure, especially to the big companies, is very small in terms of overall percentage.
You're talking like, yeah, people analogizing it to the 1907 banking crisis, so the 08 crisis, it was a little bit of fear-mongering.
Yes.
All right, so we're going to, next week we'll cover kind of your outlook, or the next video. But let's come back to kind of this pivot point where we sit here today, lessons learned for investors, because I think it's a very emotionally challenging business game, whatever euphemism you want to use. And I think understandably, clients look at all the things you laid out, you know, that haven't gone right, or mm-hmm, to expectations, and say, this feels bad.
Mm-hmm.
And if something feels bad, and some certain levels, like war is bad, are objectively bad, how can the market then be good? So I know your CNBC colleagues, you know, Tom Leal talk about V-shaped recoveries that people think they're gonna take forever, and usually I'll get out and then I'll get back in, like you're gonna miss it.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Brown put out, his team put out the piece where if you got out at that 5% drawdown, where usually clients start to panic, and waited until the markets had recovered, you miss 80%+ of your return.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to clients, I've tried my hand at it a few times,
why
feelings and facts, you can wind in, I know you're a big jobless claims data point person, the GDP that you've mentioned, how do these go together, and really what should people maybe unlearn that they think is actually useful in guiding their investments?
Well, you know, I tell you that I've told you this many times, and I tell a lot of people this, that when things get really dire and people get really scared, the first thing you do is turn the TV off.
Right.
I mean, I want people to watch me and all that,
right,
and I want them to watch CNBC, but TV, what sells is negativity,
mm-hmm,
right? And so just turn it off, take a deep breath, maybe do some reading and try to educate yourself on what is actually happening. But I go back to fundamentals matter. And that's why I always spend such a big amount of time in the macro and kind of figuring out where we are in terms of GDP growth, in terms of where the consumer, what's happening. War and all of the things that we talked about, of all the unknowns, TGIF and that sort of thing. If you have, first and foremost, I do not believe the AI food chain will be impacted at all. Mm. We are in the first or second innings in terms of the food chain, and that's a very big, big theme. The second thing is find a few themes and where they have long-term total addressable markets, you know, 10, 15 years, which is what I think the AI food chain, which is what I think cybersecurity, a lot of the themes that I like are long-tailed. And then when the market does pull back, go back and find some of the companies that are part of your favorite themes and try to take a little bit, buy a little bit, dollar cost average. Or you could do, speaking of dollar cost average, just buying the S&P 500, an index fund, and on a regular basis, no matter what the market is doing or the economy is doing, on a monthly basis or a quarterly basis, dollar cost average in, because no one can really time. And over the long term, you'll be glad you did, because the long term total return of the S&P 500 is 7.7%. The problem, Tim, is that people got used to the last 3 years of 18% growth last year, 24% the year before that, 23% before the year that. So that's not normal. You know, so I know you do such a great job in trying to educate and coach and do all that for your clients, but if you dollar cost average, then you don't really have to worry. Am I buying low? Am I buying high? And that sort of thing.
It is an important thing to say. We've had a lot of prospective clients that we had to help out, because like, well, you know, as long as the market just averages 15% forever, then then my plan looks good. I'm like, yeah, no, a lot of things would, but that's not how it works. We're going to stop it there, come back for next week for you, moments for us, and cover what might lie ahead in 2026. Thanks for being with us.
Ten Capital is a group comprised of investment professionals registered with Hightower Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Some investment professionals may also be registered with Hightower Securities, LLC, member FINRA, and SIPC. Advisory services are offered through Hightower Advisors, LLC. Securities are offered through Hightower Securities, LLC. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities. No investment process is free of risk, and there is no guarantee that the investment process or the investment opportunities referenced herein will be profitable. Past performance is neither indicative nor a guarantee of future results. The investment opportunities referenced herein may not be suitable for all investors. All data or other information referenced herein is from sources believed to be reliable. Any opinions, news, research, analyses, prices, or other data or information contained in this presentation is provided as general market commentary and does not constitute investment advice. Ten Capital and Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates make no representations or warranties, express or implied, as to the accuracy or completeness of the information, or for statements or errors or omissions, or results obtained from the use of this information. Ten Capital and Hightower Advisors, LLC assume no liability for any action made or taken in reliance on or relating in any way to this information. The information is provided as of the date referenced in the document. Such data and other information are subject to change without notice. This document was created for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed herein are solely those of the authors and do not represent those of Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates.